is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Jay from Sub70. Just wanted to give a quick intro to this episode of the podcast. This is our interview with Wisconsin's own Jerry Kelly. Jerry Kelly is a three-time PGA Tour winner and a three-time Champions Tour winner. Jason talked to him a little bit about how his time on the Champions Tour is going, playing in pro-ams with Aaron Rodgers. They talked in depth about Jerry's earlier years playing Q School, playing all sorts of mini tours, and basically just playing every tournament that he could possibly get into, which led to a 20-plus year career on the PGA Tour. They also talk about the Greater Milwaukee Open, the Ryder Cup, and some other interesting topics. So check it out. Hope you like it. Hit us up on social media at GolfSub70. Here's the interview. I'd like to welcome to the podcast three-time PGA Tour winner and three-time Champions Tour winner, Jerry Kelly. Jerry, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
No problem. My pleasure.
Well, first off, congratulations on your win at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship over in Hawaii. Has to be a great way to start the year out. Got to be off and running already.
Yeah, I mean, you always love to be one for one. You can't win them all unless you win the first one, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to take some pressure off and kind of free you up to kind of play the rest of the season, I would have to imagine. And my question is, how much fun are you having, you know, playing on the Champions Tour right now? Are you enjoying it as much as you thought you would enjoy it?
Yeah, I'm probably enjoying it even a little bit more. You know, the competition is so good, but I didn't realize that. I knew there are great players, but, you know, the level that everybody's still playing at, it's pretty impressive. So I came out here and I was like, okay, it's kind of like concert retirement party. Let's just enjoy yourselves, have fun playing golf. And I got out here and I just started getting beat up. And, you know, these guys are playing really strong. And it wasn't until I kind of learned the three-day thing and how to go low and enjoying it at the same time, and that's when things really started to fall into place. You could put too much pressure on yourself all over. I was worried about not having enough pressure, not getting my adrenaline going out here. And, you know, I didn't have that problem once I got out here.
And, you know, like you said, once you realize that you're shooting 15, 16, 17 under par in three rounds, you have to play aggressive, you have to go low, you have to make birdies. You know, it's those guys are still really, really good out there, like you were saying. I don't think the average person or average golf fan realizes how, you know, you go out and play those golf courses even as a zero handicap and go shoot 16 under par. I mean, they can really play.
Yeah, it's 19 and even in the 20s. I mean, it is something to get used to after, you know, I had left the PGA Tour, you know, just the year before. And, you know, I'm not a long hitter, so there's about, you know, six or seven courses that I could legitimately win on. And then there's also the fact that I'm not going to be shooting extremely low. I'm going to be doing well at a course that rewards par. Well, there isn't a course out here that rewards par. So definitely a different mentality to get into.
Well, I also saw at the Pro-Am event in Tucson, you were playing with your buddy Aaron Rodgers. How's he feeling, and how's his golf game right now when you're out there with him?
It's good. It's real good. I think I'm gonna play nine with him today, too. I'm not in the Pro-Am, so we're going to go play somewhere this afternoon. But, he's a great player, you know, and I'm talking about golf. He's way beyond a great player in football. But, you know, it's just a matter of when he's going to have time to put into it and get consistent with the timing. And that's not going to happen until he retires at, like, 51.
Oh, yeah, he'll probably be playing to 45 the way those guys are going.
He's going past that, buddy.
Well, looking at your 2018 goals on the Champions Tour, you know, you already have a victory this year, but what else is on your list? Is winning a major championship got to be way up there, isn't it, to notch one of those out there?
Obviously, yeah, that's going to be one of those stepping stones. A win and multiple wins, which I did last year, and then, you know, get a major, and then, win the Vitalis, and then win the Schwab. I mean, those are the goals that everybody sets for themselves. Those are the goals I set for myself on the PGA Tour as well. There's a bunch of them I didn't reach, and, I set the same goals, and I worked my butt off to reach these ones as well.
Do you miss playing the PGA Tour at all? Is there any elements?
No.
Not at all.
I really don't. This takes me back to my roots. This is even almost more advanced than the tour was in 95 when I came out. It's not that much different. Got the same scoreboards. We got the same purses, playing against the same guys. I like doing well against the current best in the world. At the Sony, I putted awful and ended up five shots back. I may still be playing the PGA Tour if I could play Wailea every single week, but that's not the case. The game has changed, and I don't have the ability to hit it as long as Phil at his age, and these guys are going way past that. So I understand it's a different game, and that's fine with me.
And I guess that's where I was going. Like, I saw you did play well at Wailea. There still has to be a little bit of a buzz that at 50 plus, you're still, competing and damn near winning at the highest level of golf. That still has to be, in the right circumstances, a cool thing to accomplish and to do and to kind of get in that arena, I would have to imagine.
Yeah, and Steve and I are going to play in New Orleans. And hopefully I play well in the majors and I'm fortunate enough to win that I can go back to the regular tour ones after, winning the ones on the senior tour. So, there are ways that I'll be playing against them. And, Bernard has showed over the years, every time he goes to the Masters and almost wins it, that, depending on the course, the tours translate. The numbers we're shooting out here translate to us going and doing it on the regular tour as well. So it'll be fun. I'm only going to, at max would be five out there. But, I got to know this young crew. I played all the way up till 50, so I got to know Spieth and Thomas and Berger and Reed and, Fowler and all these guys. And, they know I can play with them. So that makes me feel good. It's good. But day in and day out, I'll let them have that tour and I'll have my fun.
Well, let's talk about how you started playing golf up in Madison, just a little bit north of us. And did golf, or was golf your number one sport growing up, or was it mainly hockey? And then at what point did golf sort of take that over if it was hockey at first?
Let me get the standard gratuitous media shot out of the way. I never missed a golf tournament for a hockey tournament. I missed a lot of hockey tournaments for golf tournaments. Understand, I was always better at golf. I played with NHL players, future NHL players. I knew what really good hockey was. I knew they were better than me. On the golf course, that didn't happen that often. Even when I'm playing with the Steve Strickers and, at the Orange Bowl, Billy Mayfair won, I didn't feel like these guys were that much better than me. They scored better than me because, they had the year-round practice and they're used to shooting real low, where we play in crap weather up there until the middle of the summer. But golf was always my number one. But saying that, hockey was the sport that I loved the most.
So then when you go up to the University of Hartford to play golf, at what point did you know that you had the talent that you you wanted to turn pro and get out there and see what you could do with what you had? Like, was it later in college or early?
No, I went to college knowing I was going to turn pro. I went to that college to get an insurance degree, so I had something to fall back on if it didn't work. But no, I knew at a young age this was where I was going, and this was what I was going to do. You know, it took a lot of steps along the way to convince my dad, who was my bankroll, which was nice. It made it a whole lot easier than having to go out and scrounge. I was his tax write-off for a little bit, but, you know, I made money by my second year. So, I mean, it was a process from a very young age that I knew that that's where I was going to go. And, I'm not going to say I was going through the motions in college because I knew how important that insurance degree was. Ended up with a double major in finance as well. And, I put that to good use with my career, but, it sure took the pressure off of going to play as a professional. Kind of similar to some of today's pros when you get that $1 million bonus, $1 million signing bonus or whatever, you know, that was unheard of back in our day. So, you know, we had a lot more pressure to play for our food, our lodging, our transportation.
When you first started off, did you do the mini tours or did you try going to Q school right away?
I went to Q school right away, but then I did the mini tours. I did the 1 days, I did the 2 days, I did the 3 days, and sometimes all in a row. I called the alphabet tour, the J.C. Goosey, the T.C. Jordan, the USGT, the South Coast. I played everything. I went to the Sunshine Tour in South Africa for 3 months. You know, I played everywhere that I could get on a golf course and play against other guys. The two days down there at J.C. Goosey's was great because you do about a $400 to a $600 entry fee, and if you're outside the top 10 on the second day, then you could double down, and you could pay another entry for the second day, and then you'd have a good round, and you'd double dip. You'd get some of the main purse, and then you'd win the second day money. Then you'd get some skins. You'd do a lot of stuff. I mean, that's learning how to play. It's great. These guys just cruising around and doing Monday qualifiers and then not playing and waiting for that one hit strike. They're crazy, man. Go out there and play golf.
Do you think that made you, I mean, obviously you're used to playing under pressure. Do you think without that experience, you may have not been as successful as you were when you kind of got out to the PGA Tour, that you kind of had that grit and you could play well under pressure when you had to, when it's your own money at stake sort of scenario?
Totally. Totally. The big thing it probably did for me is made me play too much once I did turn pro. I was like, I'm eligible for that tournament? Well, hell, I'm playing in it, you know? My rookie year, I played in 13 straight to start out. That probably wasn't my best start, but that's the way I learned. That's the way I go about it. I grind my way through everything I could possibly get to. And does that work well for winning a ton of tournaments or focusing on majors? No. It doesn't, but it also put me up there in the all-time money list, and it's what kept my card for 22 years.
So in 95, you win twice on the Nike Tour, and then it carries over to the PGA Tour. You really never look back the rest of your career. What kind of got you to that next level? And then my follow-up is that, as playing that tour in the PGA Tour, what was the biggest difference you saw between the guys in the Nike Tour and then once you made it onto the PGA Tour of the difference of, is it not that much difference, or was there a difference that you could tell in those players once you kind of got out there?
There's not a ton of difference. One of the biggest differences is just playing the same courses year in and year out. That's huge. I mean, you know, I didn't realize until I got out here and I'm a rookie again. And, you know, I'm playing against guys who play the same golf courses for the last bunch of years. I hit it in a bunch of spots last year that I'm coming back to now going, wow, I can't believe you hit it over there. Well, that's never going to happen again. So, you know, I'm finding new spots not to hit it in, but at least I'm not making the same mistakes. And the longer you play, the fewer mistakes you make.
So the players that are out there just have that inherent advantage, like you did after being out there for 5 or 10 or 3 or 15 years. You play the golf courses, you know what you're doing, you have an advantage of the young guys coming up simply from experience.
Yep.
The other question I had is, and I think I've read this before, that you kind of considered the Great Milwaukee Open to be almost like a fifth major. And I know you lost in a playoff in 96, but what did that tournament mean to you? And did that one, does it still sting to today that you didn't get it, being from your home state and all that other stuff and the pressure that was on you playing in that event?
Yeah, all of them. I mean, every single one of them sting. You know, it doesn't matter what you're looking back on. It just depends on what you're thinking about that day. I think looking back on it now, I realize, wow, I mean, that was a lot of pressure for me. And I played well there just about every single time. So I look back on it saying, you did pretty damn good. Did you come that close to winning 4 or 5 times? Yeah. You know, did somebody beat you most of the time? Yeah. So, you know, yet do I want it? Yeah. Does it sting like you're thinking? Yeah, probably not, because I did what it took. But I came close.
And then in 2002, you have a season with 2 victories. And then obviously, you know, winning the Western, you know, kind of a huge tournament if you're in the Midwest. My question is that the biggest win of your career? And what did that mean to have a season where you had, you know, 2 victories in one season, sort of showcasing your talent, or kind of, you know, it's not one win, you got 2 wins on the major tour, and then to cap it off with the Western had to be pretty special.
Yeah, and to finish 4th on the money list that year, I mean, that was a great year for me, no question about it. Did I think there was bigger things coming? Yes. Did it pan out that way? No. So to me, really, my biggest win on the PGA Tour is probably 2009, just because, once again, a long time in between the next couple, and you don't forget how to win, but, you know, it starts wearing on you that you haven't. And, you know, to win in the 40s is an accomplishment, too. So, you know, I'd still say that one's probably bigger. But to have the whole family there and be in the Midwest, that was a great time.
Yeah, that I was actually going to bring up New Orleans with the victory in 2009, and you know, and also the great golf you played in your 40s. It has to be, I'm imagining, a huge advantage to be exempt on the PGA Tour in your 40s going into the Champions Tour, that you're not doing the 2 years off between your late 40s and trying to restart it up. To have that flow to go into the Champions Tour has to be a huge advantage for you to get out there when you were 50, as well as you played in your 40s or even late 40s.
Yeah, there's no question. But then you also got to know that was 22 straight years, really 28 straight years of pro, and I never got a break. You know, the body hurts pretty much every day for every single person out here. I think, you know, the average Joe, you know, may not consider golfers as much athletes. They do now when they see what's going on. But, you know, that repetitive motion and just doing something athletic with that much adrenaline going through your body, it ravages you for quite a while. So, you know, last year I was kind of saying, let's just take a year off and just kind of play and have some fun. And it translated into better golf. So, you know, it gave me a little better outlook for even this year.
Yeah. And then following up with your PGA Tour career, I mean, it's pretty crazy when you look at it. I don't think the average fan realizes how consistent and good you were with $29 million and earning 616 events. Like you said, 22 years on tour straight. Do you think at some level you're underappreciated because to have that run and to do it for your entire career is pretty impressive? I don't know if people realize how hard that is to do year in and year out and be that consistent.
Yeah, I've been through a lot of regime changes of golf. That's for sure. You know, it's one of those things that a lot of the players started realizing it. I mean, some of the young ones, but you know, the average fan, they're always looking at the top. You know, they're not looking at, you know, and I spent a lot of time between 30 and 70. That was kind of my spot. And, you know, they don't go down that far, which is fine. But, yeah, for my age and really my stature in the game to go that long, that consistent, that's but I'm probably one of the best grinders ever. That's just saying it's putting a grinder tag on me, which I love, but I was never the extremely talented guy or the best mental game guy or this or that. I just grounded out of the dirt as best I could.
Well, also with the we're talking about events in Wisconsin, with the event you guys have in Madison now on the Champions Tour for the American Family Insurance, I'm assuming that's got to be in place of the Greater Milwaukee Open now, right? It's got to be for you and Steve Stricker. I imagine like you would love to have that one notched into your champions case at some point. I'm imagining.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that goes without saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and then my question is it hard to prepare for that event with family and friends, and it's your hometown and all that stuff? Is it kind of actually difficult to stay focused that you're there to win a golf tournament on top of the entertaining and everything else you have to do?
Nope. I'd rather entertain and then just go play golf. It's what I did in Milwaukee. It's what I'll do here. You know, it takes more pressure off me than puts it on me, tell you the truth. But I just go have fun with people with that one.
Well, speaking of guys that you're close with, Steve Stricker had the win last week. I'm assuming that has to mean a ton to him. And what can you talk about your friendship with him over the years, and what do you admire about Steve the most?
Well, it's great. Our friendship is pretty deep, and it's such a fun, competitive friendship. I mean, I was joking with him after the win. I was like, you know, you hadn't finished it, but I knew when you saw my name up there in second, you were damn well going to finish this one. So, and he kind of laughed, and we know that, I mean, that had to spur him and help him coming down the stretch, just seeing my name ready and waiting for him, because he's like, oh, that's not happening. So we have a great time playing in the team competitions together. You know, one guy wants to get closer to the next one. I want to make the putt before he has the putt, and you know, we have a great time, and you know, we're both such a good family, man. We have a lot to talk about with our families, and we just don't have the same personalities or the same off course things that we do. I can't sit still, and he likes to sit still up in a deer stand, so those don't mesh, but we sure have a good time together.
Is there anything about Steve that the general public kind of has wrong and that is actually different than the reality? And is there any great, funny Steve Stricker stories you could share without, you know, throwing him under the bus or anything horrible like that?
Hey, he is a ridiculous competitor. I mean, when this guy cries at the end of a tournament, it's because internally he's working his ass off and he wants to rip your head off. You know, I mean, when you get into the heat with Streak, there's no Mr. Nice Guy there. he's a great guy, but he's not the nice guy. He wants to get that thing done, but that's what all great champions have. So I think that's the best quality that he has, is just that inner drive.
Well, the next few questions I have for you are just a little bit on the lighter side, and we kind of go through them fairly quick. So just give me your kind of quick reaction to this one. So
good.
Well, a little more than that. Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
Best golf shot I ever hit under pressure. I don't know. Huh. That's a good question.
We can circle back to that one if you want. I didn't know if there's one in your career that just, you know, sticks out. What I've asked other guys where they just can instantly be like, it's that one on a, you know, when I really needed it. I don't know if you're going to like this one or not, but I'll ask you. If you don't want to answer, it's okay. But it's who had the most raw talent you were ever around in professional golf that you got to witness? Just pure raw talent.
Pure raw talent?
Yep.
I'm sorry, but how can I not say Tiger Woods?
It comes up pretty often when I ask that
question. I mean, there's nobody who had more raw talent. You know, he changed his swings for the fun of it because he was doing so good. He thought, why not? you know. I mean, yeah, he was trying to get better, but, I mean, really? After the year in 2000, to just scrap it all and see what it can do next? I mean, that's just getting bored with dominating. That's some serious talent.
Yeah, the most common answer I get is Tiger Woods or John Daly. When I just talk, when I ask about just raw natural talent, by far those are the two names that have come up the most.
Yeah.
Best three golf courses in Wisconsin, which is really becoming a hotbed for some high-quality golf. But in your opinion, what's the three best in state right now?
Milwaukee Country Club, Sand Valley, Whistling Straits, and Erin Hills. I'll put four in there.
Put four in there. That's a pretty good list. The other question I put out there, I was going to be talking to you, and some people ask these questions. The Lucky 13 logo that they put on your bag or your hat or whatever it might be, how did that come about?
If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
All right. I don't want to die quite yet. We can let that one go. I don't want death by Mr. Kelly. And then the other question I had, this was actually from Chuck Theory at Cleveland Golf. He asked if you're drinking any good scotches right now and if you'd recommend anything.
No, I'm not a scotch guy. I'm a wino. So if he wants to talk wine with me, I'll be more than happy to. But Aaron Rodgers is a scotch man. You know, I'd have to defer to him.
All right. Well, Chuck gave me the wrong info on that one then. So then my last question I have for you, if Mr. Stricker gets to be the Ryder Cup captain in Whistling Straits in 2020, I'm sure you would love to be on there, but do you think it would be realistic to have you up there as a vice captain?
I would love to be on there, yet I think the PGA of America thinks of me more as a mascot than a vice captain, but they're saving the vice captainships for, like, you know, future and past Ryder Cuppers and captains and vice captains. So, yeah, I don't think they'd have room for me, but, you know, I'd lend whatever I could. I know that.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much. I appreciate your time so much. I know you're under the weather, and thanks for taking the time with us today, and play well at the event this week.
All right. Thanks, man.